Allison Downey is a singer-songwriter, an associate professor of elementary education at Western Michigan University, and a renowned storyteller. And that's what we're going to talk about today. For the first time, Downey is attending the Storytelling Festival here in Kalamazoo. Thanks for being here, Allison.
Thanks so much for having me, Rebecca.
So you've actually told a few stories on The Moth, and you were also a Story Slam winner. Talk about that experience.
The experience of winning? Or the experience of being just a Story Slam participant?
Both.
Okay. Well, I have had wonderful experiences with The Moth. Before I ever participated as a Story Slam teller, I think I went to maybe 3 or 4 months worth of Story Slams in New York City because that was part of my sabbatical research. I was doing a comparative analysis of contemporary storytelling formats, and I was comparing the contemporary format of The Moth that we might see represented best in The Moth to some of the more traditional storytelling experiences that you'd see today. And so I went to observe and interview people and interviewed lots of people, and then eventually went to the next step of just putting my name in the hat, is what they call it. It's actually a bag that says The Moth. But it's exhilarating. For me, I've been a performer my whole life. I've got an MFA in theater and have toured as a performer before. But it's a very different sort of format. And the time limit is a little bit overwhelming at first, and then just a great challenge.
So what is it about the time limit? Is it they're somewhat lengthy, aren't they?
Or I don't think so.
A
5-minute story. For the Story Slams, they're 5 minutes. And so it's long if you're telling an anecdote, but if you're telling a full-fledged story, you really only have time for the bare bones. You have to get into it, fly that plane, and land it.
I'm not sure how this works. Is it a specific story that wins, or is it do you tell like a few days of stories, and then they kind of say, based on these, you're the winner? You know, how does that work out?
That's a great question. Well, for The Moth, and when I was in New York, I attended maybe 25, 20, 28 different storytelling events, and The Moth was one of them that I'd go to. It was the Story Slams were weekly. For a slam that's very similar to what we might know as a poetry slam or other types of slams that you have, Story Slam has been around for maybe about 10 years, but it's just gotten notoriety in about the last 5 or 6. And for The Moth themselves, they select judges from the audience, and they're completely randomly selected. So you can have somebody that has never seen a Moth Story Slam before, people that are seasoned or have been tellers or are professional storytellers. It runs the gamut. And they give you some judging criteria, and that have to do with, is there a beginning, middle, and end? So did they tell a story? Is it within the time limit? If it's over the time limit, they start deducting points. It's a point scale of 1 to 10. And I think just getting on stage, you get a 7 because it's a brave thing to do. And so there needs to be some sort of change. The character, who is you, because it's a true personal story, takes a journey. And so it's for that one night. If you win a story slam, then the next 10 Story Slam winners will then compete in what they call the Grand Slam. And I did that in Detroit last year. And then they have the main stage. And I actually was a main stage performer before I was a Story Slam winner. And the main stage, you get a little bit more time. You have about a 12-minute story that you can sit with for a little bit and have a greater arc, which is really fun.
And I listened to two of those on your website, which were great. I thought we could maybe talk about those a little bit. You have a really funny story about the Rocky Horror Picture Show and seeing that for the first time. And I thought it was really interesting that you said that you weren't really prepared for the Rocky Horror Picture Show, not in just the, you weren't sure what kind of movie it was or anything like that, but just, you know, where you were in life, you weren't prepared for something like that. Can you kind of elaborate?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a story, I call it Rocky Horror Picture Show. I told for the Moth Slam, Grand Slam, for the theme Fall from Grace. And it's essentially a story about being a very naive 14-year-old going to my very first high school dance and practically missing it because I was in the play Oklahoma, which is relevant because it's just quite a contrast to Rocky Horror Picture Show. And my date, who was also a tech person for Oklahoma, he and I had just made it for the very tail end of the dance. And then he suggests we go to Rocky Horror Picture Show, which I knew nothing about. And we had, and I was a little overwhelmed by the subject, by the costumes around me. And it's just one of the things that I like about telling that story is because it, I think everybody can relate to feeling out of place. And at that time in my life, I was very much out of place in that environment. And as I say, I have, you know, I love the film now. I love the play. And I have, there would have been plenty of times later in my life that I would have been dancing in the aisles. But at that time, I was uncomfortable and I was insecure. And sometimes I think it's wonderful to tell stories from that time because we can all relate to that.
And then you also have another story that's very personal for you about your friend Liddy, your childhood friend who passed away, and kind of being involved in her funeral in some ways, and how that all played out. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. That's actually a story I hadn't intended to tell. I was invited by the Moth to tell a story at their main stage, which are hand-selected. They pick six storytellers, and it's usually at a big stage. This one happened to be at the Power Center in Ann Arbor and also at St. Cecilia's in Grand Rapids, you know, so 1,300 people. They spend time with it. And the theme for that, I think, was crack-up, stories of, I don't know what it was, crisis and calamities or something like that. And I pitched to them a story that I had about kind of a horseback riding camping trip gone awry in Wyoming when I was 15. And they asked me a really wonderful question, the director did, and said, well, who were you before this incident? Because it was an incident where I'm from Washington, D.C. I was not a city slicker, but I was definitely not a Western girl and was not comfortable out in the wilderness and had been placed in this environment that I was kind of excited to go to. But we ended up with terrible circumstances where everything went wrong. And I ended up being the one in charge after my counselor met a kind of terrible fate that she survived, but it was a bad scene. And so they were interested in, you know, who was I before that trip and who was I after that trip? And as we talked about it, I was saying, you know, it wasn't that I hadn't dealt with hard things. Most people, by the time they're 14, they've dealt with something difficult. And I remember just saying to them that it wasn't that I couldn't handle things. It was just something, it was still a very difficult situation. I said, you know, I'd decorated my best friend's casket. And then, you know, the floodwaters open and I realized, wow, that's actually part of the story. And so I went back to it and wrote about that experience that I had not thought about for a long, not allowed myself probably to think about for a long time.
It's amazing how in storytelling those things come out. You know, I think it's a very compelling story. You know, I mean, either one would have been very compelling on their own. But I think it's very interesting the way that we connect things in our minds. And you were able to tell that connection throughout that story.
Well, I'm glad you saw it that way. I do a lot of workshops and retreats in creativity and songwriting and storytelling. And one of the things that I teach about, as well as experience, is the transformative power of storytelling, certainly for the listener, but in the creation and the crafting of your story, it's a transformative process. And it can be if you allow yourself to go there. I'm not suggesting everybody has to lay their, you know, deepest, darkest, hardest experiences out there for everyone. But for me, with this particular story, there were things that I found just in this process that I had not considered, because when last time I stored that process, I was still very young. And so you have the gift of time and reflection. And every time you come back to an experience, I mean, a story is your crafting of life experience, and life experience is messy. And so one of the things that I really value about storytelling personally and as a tool for personal development and community building is the fact that in returning to an experience, you're not actually going back to that experience. You're bringing everything that you've learned and experienced since then to that experience. And so the story that you create is different now than it will be in 5 years, than it will be in 10 years, or it should be, because you've lived longer. And so I thought I knew what that story was, and I did for when I was 14. But to come back as a full-grown woman with my own child was a different experience. And I think also it's there. We talk about how storytelling can impact the listener, but sometimes the process of crafting your stories and telling your stories can impact you beyond that. So, for instance, the story that you heard was about my dear friend, my best friend from growing up, who died young, way too young, at 14, from a disease. And her mother asked me if I would decorate her coffin. And the story is about my sort of coming to terms with her death and having this creative outlet as a way to celebrate her. That story in and of itself is about sort of coming to terms with that I wanted to be there, and the way that sometimes you come up with ways to be there for someone after the fact. And that's essentially what happened. But at the time, I never really saw things from her mother's perspective. What a gift it was to me that her mother would offer me a creative outlet to express my grief. And so as a result of actually telling this story, I got back in touch with her parents, who had kept in touch with for many years. But as a result of that story, I contacted them, first of all, to get their permission and to tell them about the story and make sure that my recollections were accurate. And we connected, and I went to Washington to visit my family and brought my then 2-year-old son to come meet them, and was able to actually see the cloth that I had made for her casket, which was really powerful. And then that experience, I performed at the National Storytelling Festival this fall, and the experience of returning to her mother was something that became a story in and of itself. So the process of crafting that story actually impacted my life in a way that caused me to take action, and I'm grateful for that.
And for you, what is that process? When you know that you have a story, you know, how do you take those initial nuts and bolts and how do you, you know, make that into something beautiful?
Boy, that is a great question. That's much of what I teach about, because I'm definitely still in that process. And I think I always will be in breaking down what is the process of crafting a story. One of the first things I do is I do a lot of brainstorming, and I teach about the creative process. I'm teaching a course now at Western in the nature of creativity. And so that sort of divergent thinking of coming up with lots of different ideas and documenting those. And then I look for connections. I look for things that might have an emotional impact for me. And the story that I just referred to is a very, very sad and touching and heartfelt story. And I also tell light ones and fun ones. Predominantly, that's what I do. But oftentimes what I'll do is I'll think, if there is a theme, the theme can sort of jog my memory. And for instance, that story about my friend, I had thought of it at one point for a completely different theme for that story with my friend, I thought about it for a completely different theme. And that's one of the things that I work with, is how my life experience, whatever those experiences are, I can cut it in lots of different ways, right? It's like a diamond, our own life experiences. And we just look at them through a different lens. And so I don't feel like I'm ever at a loss for a story, just because I've had great experiences in my life and I've met wonderful people. But I believe that for everybody else as well. You know, there's nothing really too, there's nothing that I think would be too insignificant to be a story to play with. But you also have to be willing to let some of them go. You know, the idea that first came to you isn't necessarily the idea that everybody else is going to ultimately want to hear. You work with it.
Sit with it for a while, kind of thing.
Yeah, play with it. Play with it and try it out and sit with it. And for me, they have to be something that there's a reason I'm telling it. It's either because I think it's other something that people can relate to, or it's something that I believe very powerfully in, that maybe people don't relate to, but I think are important topics, issues of social justice, whatever they might be, that I think are stories that need to be told.
Talking about some of your story fodder, you have lived on 5 continents. Isn't that right?
Well, I have been to 5 continents. I haven't lived in extended periods of time in 5 continents, but I've traveled quite a bit.
You know, how did you come upon this sort of wayfaring way of life?
That's so funny you ask, because my poor parents, when I was a little girl, I told them I was never leaving home. And I think they were a little bit distraught at the thought of that. When I was 16, and I hadn't traveled much before at all, but when I was 16, my mother had an opportunity through a friend of a friend to do an informal exchange where their daughter in their best friend's daughter in Spain wanted to live with a family in the United States. And we just kind of switched and saved up a lot of money to make that happen. And I didn't speak a word of Spanish. And I learned a lot, and I thought, well, I'll just try it. And I really had the time of my life, and it opened my eyes to so many things that I got a bug, and that travel bug. And I have never lost it.
You know, do you have an example of one of the stories that you tell from some of these travels?
Yes, I do. I have plenty of stories from these times of travel. This fall, I was working with a company called Journeys International out of Ann Arbor, and they do international adventure travel. And they're an incredible company. But they were wanting to create a storytelling event for their 35th anniversary. And we had 6 storytellers that I worked with and coached. And then I was telling my own story around the theme of travel and transformation. And the story that I told was about a backpacking trip I took across Europe it was about my love of travel and my motto that I would travel at all cost for no cost. And essentially the story takes me through enough experiences that at the end I decide that sometimes no cost is too much cost. And so I end up on a beach in Nice, covered with garbage from a street cleaner, soaking wet. And it wasn't a pretty sight. So we moved on from there, from sleeping on beaches and traveling at no cost. So I now save money to travel.
You can always do that when you're young, right?
Right, exactly. But even I had reached my limit at that point. But it was a story of love, falling in love with a person and falling in love with travel.
And you are also a mom.
I am.
You talked about your now 5-year-old son, isn't that right?
Yes.
And he's the subject of a lot of your stories, too.
He is. I did a story for a science-themed storytelling organization called Story Collider, based out of Brooklyn. And they're in Cambridge, Chicago, England. They tour all over the place now. But I did a story for them in Brooklyn and in Ann Arbor on the theme. I called it Maternal Instinct. And my husband used to be a professor here, a psychology professor here at Western, a behavioral psychologist. And the story is really about the the battle between my maternal instinct and his behavioral science. And the subject of that is certainly trying to figure out how to raise a two-year-old when my maternal instinct sometimes didn't win out. And sometimes his behavioral science didn't win out. But it's a struggle that I think a lot of parents can relate to.
And it's always very funny to kind of look behind the scenes at parenting, I guess, because we as children have this idea of our parents are always this unified force, and many times they try to be, you know, and try to always have the same line of thinking. But then, you know, you learn later on that there were a lot of discussions that happened after the initial sit down, you know.
Well, absolutely. I don't think we don't really have. I mean, I guess there are courses in parenting, but we don't put probably as much emphasis on that training for parenting as perhaps we should. So there's not a great manual, and we play it by ear. And I think, in my experience, sometimes you rely on where you're most comfortable. That's where it comes from. But it's been a joy to have these experiences with my son. I brought him with me, my son and my husband to New York. So he was, I don't actually tell a lot of stories about him. I just have that one because it's his own life. I don't really want to impinge on that, but I do practice my stories for children on him. And I get a lot of input from him.
Is he a tough critic?
He is my toughest critic. He definitely is my toughest critic. It's good. You need a tough critic.
And you're also a songwriter as well.
Yeah, sure. Some typical themes or common themes that I address. Well, my last album was called Across the Sea, and I released that here in Michigan. We recorded that at Mackinac Harvest Studios in Grand Rapids. And I performed that with my husband, John, and then some incredible performers as well. But many of the songs there, the title of the album came to me after all the songs had been written. And I certainly saw a through line of travel in there. I have a story about Ireland, a story about the Aegean Sea, story about missing somebody far away when I was in England. I've got a story about Texas, which is where I moved here from. I was a musician and theater artist in Austin, and right before I moved here, that's where I moved to Michigan from. And that is a song that I actually wrote after leaving Texas. I wrote it after my first visit back. And so there is a lot of through line of travel. I think I do a lot of stories more before than I do now, but about relationships, about the nuances, missed communications, missed connections, wonderful connections, those sorts of things.
And can you kind of describe the feel of your music in Across the Sea? So, you know, I kind of hear a little bit of that Texas flair somewhere in there, but hopefully you can describe it a little bit better than I can.
Sure. That Texas flair is certainly in that song, Texas, because it does have a country twang to it. But it's funny. It depends on where you go. In Texas, they consider it folk, like Boston type of folk. And in Boston, they consider it more Southern country. In Michigan, there is a genre that we're calling urban folk, Midwestern urban folk. And so that's sort of what the brand has been. So it's contemporary folk. It's got, especially when I'm playing with my husband, it's got a little bit of rhythm to it. And but it's still squarely in that sort of alternative folk category.
So what can we expect from you at the Storytelling Festival coming up?
I'm really excited about it. This is the first time I performed, but I attended it last year as an audience member. So I'm thrilled to be there. I am going to be focusing on family audiences. So, you know, I will have young children. The focus is something that's going to be engaging for children age I guess they said probably between 5 and 12, and hopefully we'll also be engaging to adults. So it's a little bit different than some of the stories that I might tell, definitely different than the ones I tell at the Moth. But I will have some music, original songs. I'll be doing a traditional story that is sort of interactive. So I try to make some of the pieces interactive, and I will probably do a personal narrative in there that's also interactive. With the kids. I used to tour as a storyteller in Texas. I would create for a theater company. I would create interactive musical storytelling pieces. And so it would be a program. It would be based on a folk tale or some sort of traditional tale. And then I would intersperse it with music and getting the children involved in some way, whether it was creative drama or whether it was just right from their seat. And those were really fun hour-long, 45-minute-long pieces to create. So I'm sort of pulling back and pulling some pieces from that style, as well as trying to merge a little bit with the kind of contemporary personal narrative storytelling format. One of the outcomes of my sabbatical was to develop this blended musical storytelling style, because as a singer-songwriter, I would always incorporate stories in between my songs, intros and outros. And as a theater artist in my work, I would always have music as being sort of transitional that I would create. And so what I'm working on now is really blending the two of those so that they're fairly equal. And I'll be doing a performance in Denver in about 6 weeks that is an hour-long performance piece that weaves in stories and music kind of seamlessly from one to the other. So I'm really getting very interested in creating these one-woman shows for adult audiences and concert and theater spaces, and also continuing to develop my programs for children in schools and at festivals.
Is that ever exhausting for you, an hour-long show? You know, how do you remember what you're going to tell and exactly the way that you want to tell it?
Well, hopefully, if I'm really in the moment and I'm really there with the audience, I won't tell it exactly the same way from night to night. But I find that if I'm there and I'm in the zone, it's more energizing than depleting. If I haven't had enough time to rehearse it, then it might be a little more depleting. But we're keeping our fingers crossed for energizing. So I'm really thrilled about bringing that sort of style to both younger audiences and to the adult audience in the theater world and in the music concert hall world.
I guess, did we go over what you might be singing about with the children?
Oh,
storytelling, like, you know, some of the themes or something.
Sure. I have I've got a song that I wrote about a little girl named Lila, and it's called Little Lila Knows. And it's all the things that kids do that they know they're not supposed to do and why they do that. And so it's a silly song and then sort of fun. It's silly and then poignant. And I'll be doing a song about Little Red Riding Hood, and that I've made an alternative ending for. And I'll be doing a folk tale, and I will, I'm working on developing a couple of different season-specific personal narratives that would be, may end up being tall tales. We'll see how it goes.
Anything else that you wanted to say or that we didn't cover?
Well, I did say that I'm coaching people now individually and working with companies on sort of developing the story of their company, which is really interesting. So I've been having some conversations with people in the business school about storytelling for business, as well as creativity for business. And I'm teaching a storytelling class coming up in the fall that I'm really hoping I get some students from all across the university that might be interested in that. That's been a really fun outlet to combine my passion for teaching and coaching and connecting it with this subject matter of storytelling, whether it's in a workshop format, an individual coaching, or in a longer course or retreat.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be neat.
It'll be fun, yeah.
I did have one last question. What makes a good storyteller?
Well, that's what I've been doing research on in the last 3 years. I think that one of the things that makes a good storyteller is somebody that's believable and authentic and connects with the audience. So when I watch somebody on stage, to me, what draws me in is that they're engaging with me, that they're actually authentically connecting with me. I'm not as interested in a big fourth wall, which in theater is what we call sort of the separation between the stage and the audience, which is one of the reasons I really like storytelling, because you are just talking to people, sharing with them something that you have to tell, a story you have to tell. So for me, that authenticity is really important. And it's one of the reasons that one of the things I love about going to the Moth, you get people up there that have just heard the theme and thought of an idea and got up on stage and they just want to share this story. And I love it. I really do love that.
Thank you so much for sharing your bridge stories with me and for coming into the station today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. And thanks for supporting the work for the Storytelling Festival.
Allison Downey will be at the second annual Storytelling Festival here in Kalamazoo on Saturday at the Kalamazoo Valley Museum.